Let's go back to where we read in 1 Thessalonians. And we read there at the end of chapter 2, and we read chapter 3 of 1 Thessalonians. And let's start off our thoughts this morning from verse 8 of chapter 3. So Paul is writing to this church in Thessalonica. And it's a church he only spent a short time with, and he's worried and he's been wondering how they're doing since he had to leave them when the riot broke out. And it says, now that he's heard they're doing well, verse 8, "For now we really live, since you are standing firm in the Lord." What joy, says Paul, we have, because we've just heard that you are going on in that faith that you first embraced when we were with you. We really live since you're standing firm in the Lord. Standing firm in the Lord. Now, I'm going to ask a question to start with this morning, and we'll come back to it throughout the message. But how connected are you to Jesus this morning? Like the light had to be connected up to the mains power. How connected are you to Jesus this morning? And alongside that question, does your connection to Jesus rely on other people? Does it rely on other people to help you to get connected? Or is it a direct connection between you and Jesus? Now, we read a story about Paul in Acts 17, and he's on his travels. He's coming to new cities all the time that have never heard about Jesus Christ. Now, that would be intimidating, to go into a place, a big city that's never heard of Jesus, and to start preaching and telling about Jesus. But Paul always had an approach when he did that. He went to the city and he found the synagogue where the Jewish people who lived in the city would worship, and also where some of the Gentiles, some of the Greeks, would also worship at the synagogue. And so we read in Acts 17 where we read, "As was his custom, Paul went into the synagogue, and on three Sabbath days he reasoned with them from the scriptures." Now, where we read in Acts 17, if you listen carefully to it, it looks like Paul was only in Thessalonica for maybe about 3 weeks. 2 or 3 weeks. He was there for 3 weekends anyway, it tells us about. And in that short time, God worked through Paul and Silas and those who were with him in the most amazing way. So there was what you would really call in modern day terms a revival, and a true awakening. It says, "Some of the Jews were persuaded and joined Paul and Silas, as did a large number of God-fearing Greeks and quite a few prominent women." So in 3 weeks, from zero, a church was started. Now, that's pretty good going. It's an example of what God can do. And history is full of examples like that. We're probably on the West Coast just now, kind of a bit fast asleep church-wise. We're kind of used to things just going along on a kind of even keel or even declining a bit. But there are places in the world today where the preaching of Jesus is just producing explosive results. And it's always been like that. And sometimes after a while the church kind of settles down and people stop really having faith and stop trying to do new things anymore. Stop sharing Jesus with excitement. And they kind of go to sleep. And we're probably in that phase in the Western world even today, not just in our highlands. But God can waken churches up out of nothing, just like he did in Thessalonica. But this church in Thessalonica has kind of sprung up out of the synagogue. And in the synagogue there were some Jews who became Christians, but there were a lot of God-fearing Greeks. Now, if you were a Gentile, it wasn't easy to go to synagogue, because the synagogue was a Jewish cultural place. And it was a place where the Jews really tried to stay separate from all the paganism that was round about them. And so they tried to live separately, they tried to eat separately, they had their own dietary rules, and they tried to keep sort of clean in a ceremonial sense so that they could worship God. And to come into that as a Gentile could be quite a big thing to take on. And of course they circumcised their male infants as part of their religion. So it was a big thing to take on if you're a Greek. But Paul comes and shows them, well, actually, all that the synagogue is teaching about from the Old Testament is really telling us that there's someone coming who's going to just gather up all that God's been doing in the Old Testament and fulfill it all, and who's going to bring salvation not just to the Jews, but to the Gentiles. And that someone, says Paul, is Jesus Christ. So Paul shows the people at the synagogue who are listening to him preach that now that Jesus has come, they don't need to go into all the rituals of circumcision and the food laws and separating from everyone else. Now that Jesus has come, they can be connected to God directly. Paul is just there with them for maybe 3 weeks or so. And in that time, he intensively teaches them. But the problem is, he knew that he wasn't going to be there for long, as verse 4 of chapter 3 says. We're with you, we kept telling you we'd be persecuted. It turned out that way. You know, we had to leave. And so Paul knew that he only had a few weeks to get these people from zero knowledge of Jesus to a secure Christian faith. Now, it would be very easy, you would think, that over 3 weeks, if Paul had to leave, that after 3 weeks, everything would just kind of fall dead again, fall by the wayside. All that Paul had done would stop. Because you think, well, Paul's the guy that it all happened through. When Paul's gone, it's all going to collapse. And of course, Paul was an incredibly charismatic and caring person. In chapter 2, he tells us about the way that he ministered. If you look at the middle of verse 6 of chapter 2, he says, as apostles of Christ, we could have been a burden to you, but we were gentle among you, like a mother caring for her little children. We loved you so much that we were delighted to share with you not only the gospel of God, but our lives as well, because you've become so dear to us. Surely you remember, brothers, our toil and hardship. We worked night and day in order not to be a burden to anyone, while we preached the gospel of God to you. You are our witnesses, and so is God, of how holy, righteous, and blameless we were among you who believed. For you know that we dealt with each of you as a father deals with his own children, encouraging, comforting, and urging you to live lives worthy of God, who calls you into his kingdom and glory. Wow. What a great pastor. Just gentle like a mother, like a father, caring for his children. And that's how Paul approached these people. And in those 3 weeks, they grew to love him. And in those 3 weeks, you might have thought that they would also grow to depend upon him. Because that often happens in churches. It often happens with young Christians particularly, that they depend on the person who helped them find Jesus. And what then you would expect would be that when Paul leaves, they'd be like sheep without a shepherd, and the synagogue would reclaim them back in, and they'd become confused and disillusioned, and they'd lose their Christian faith. So Paul, because he's aware of that danger, what does he do? Well, he doesn't let them become dependent on him. Instead, what he does do is he quickly puts them in touch directly with Jesus himself. And so we read in Acts 17 about Paul going to Thessalonica. And when he got there, we read about him preaching there, explaining and proving that the Christ had to suffer and rise from the dead. This Jesus I'm proclaiming to you is the Christ. So what Paul is saying is, look, it's not about me. I know I care for you, and I know I love you, and I want to encourage you and comfort you and help you, but it's not about me. It's about Jesus. What I want to do, says Paul, is I want to put you in touch with Jesus. Now, this is a day and age of personality cult, isn't it? And it can happen in churches too, where, and we see it in the preacher sometimes too. You know, you get a larger than life preacher comes into a congregation, and the congregation grows, and then the preacher moves on, and the congregation shrinks again. Because it's been about the person who's in the pulpit. But what Paul does is says, it's not about me, it's about Jesus. And he wants people not to depend on him, because he's not even going to be there for long. He wants to put people directly in touch with Jesus. When I was a student minister, I spent quite a lot of time up in Scourie, up in West Sutherland. And there are a number of people in the congregation there from the Kyle Strom estate, working on the estate. And one day they took me away out in the estate, away out a track, to show me a hydroelectric dam and hydroelectric station. Now, of course, all the rage to build little hydroelectric stations on estates, but this hydroelectric station had been built in 1928. And the generator that was installed in 1928 was still there, working. I mean, that's about 30 years ago now, but incredible. So I was very impressed with that. But anyway, this generator and this little generator house supplied the electricity for the estate, for the lodge, Kelstrom Lodge, and for all the estate workers' houses round about it. But there was a bit of a problem, and the problem was that whenever in the summer the Lady Mary Grosvenor and all her entourage came to live in the lodge, they demanded a lot of electricity. So when Lady Mary Grosvenor and all the people were in the lodge and put their showers on and their kettles on and all the rest of it, the lights would grow exceedingly dim in the estate houses. So in every estate house there was a big switch. And the big switch in the estate house switched you off the private hydroelectric scheme and onto the national grid. So, but the only thing was you had to pay for it on the national grid. So the estate workers were kind of reluctant to switch the switch. But of course when the lights got so dim that they could hardly see, they would switch the switch and come onto the national grid, and everything would brighten up and everything would work again. Well, what Paul did here was he said to folks, look, I don't want you seeking your power from God through me. I want you to connect, if you like, to the power of God directly. So he was telling them, look, I want you to switch from me to where the power really is, and that's Jesus. And of course, the power of Jesus is free, not like the national grid. The power of Jesus is free. So he's wanting them to switch over from depending on himself to directly going to Jesus in their prayers and in their reading of the Bible. Switch to Jesus. Have you switched to Jesus? So that, you know, even if you were living in isolation, even if you were in solitary confinement, your relationship with God would still thrive? Or do you always depend on other people keeping you going and encouraging you, and, you know, maybe people like myself or Christian friends or, you know, the ladies' Bible study group or whatever it is, just as long as other people are there to kind of give you a push and chiv you along, then you're doing okay. But when you're not in that company, you go downhill. You know, Paul says, no, you've got to switch to Jesus. You've got to seek Jesus yourself and really connect to him yourself. Because you don't know when other people might not be there for you, but Jesus always will be. You've got to switch over to him. So, this is what Paul's teaching. These very young Christians in Thessalonica, and they've only been Christians for a few weeks, Paul teaches them intensively, and then there's a riot, a Jews riot, and Paul says they have to move on, or their lives are in danger, they have to move on. So what's going to happen now? Well, Paul goes off to Athens, and he goes to that city and starts telling them about Jesus there. But he's praying. He says in chapter 2, verse 17, he's torn away from them. in person but not in thought. They're always in his thoughts, these Thessalonians. They're always in his mind, and he's praying for them. But he's afraid for them. As he says in verse 5 of chapter 3, I was afraid that in some way the tempter might have tempted you and our efforts might have been useless. He's afraid. So what does he do? He sends Timothy, verse 2 of chapter 3. We sent Timothy, who's our brother and God's fellow worker, in spreading the gospel of Christ to strengthen and encourage you in your faith. And Timothy goes up to Thessalonica and he spends some time and he finds that the church there that only had 3 weeks of Paul to get it started, because he connected them directly to Jesus, they're still full of life, they're still full of power, because Jesus is continuing to grow the church. It's not depending on a charismatic leader like Paul. Jesus is working in his people. And so Timothy finds these people are still following Jesus, and he encourages them and helps them. And then Timothy, after a while, he goes back to find Paul to tell him this. But this time Paul's moved on from Athens to Corinth. And verse 6 of chapter 3, at Corinth, Timothy catches up with him. Timothy has just now come to us from you and has brought good news about your faith and love. And there's this great report. He has told us that you always have pleasant memories of us and that you long to see us just as we also long to see you. Therefore, brothers, in all our distress and persecution, we were encouraged about you because of your faith. For now we really live, since you're standing firm in the Lord. Paul's strategy to put them in touch with Jesus has really worked. And Timothy has found that out and has come back with this wonderful and encouraging report. Timothy was a real encouragement to Paul. To Paul who'd established this church. People who work in leadership in churches need encouragement. They need Timothys. They need people who can encourage them. You were down in Plockton this morning and Martin's preaching and God speaks, tell him. Malcolm preached last Sunday evening at the commissioning of Timmy Curry for the youth work post, and brought a really good relevant message. Don't want to swell up your head, Malcolm, but it was a real blessing. And if you want to listen to that, if you missed it, it's on our website. So here's a young church that has been established in a very, very short time, but connected directly to Jesus, and now they're standing firm in the Lord. And Paul says, now we really live because you live. So verse 8, now we really live since you're standing firm in the Lord. The Lord, of course, is Jesus. And the Lord is risen. Because we are the church today who believe in the risen Lord Jesus Christ. We read a book that tells us about things that happened 2,000 years ago in the New Testament times. But that's just like our foundational document. And reading through the book of Acts yesterday in the public reading of the book was really exciting, just to see God working in all the different situations that we read about. But the book of Acts was written after Jesus died. But it begins by saying that Luke, who's writing the book of Acts, has already written a gospel, and he says, I wrote about what Jesus began to do, but now I'm writing about what Jesus continues to do. Because he's alive. And it's so important as Christians that we understand that this is central to our faith. That Jesus isn't only a historical figure, but he's a living reality. And he's present with his church by his Spirit. And so we can, as I said to the children, we can speak to him and we can ask for his power today. We too can be connected to Jesus. We too can stand firm in the Lord. We're not standing firm in the free church. We're not standing firm in Roddy Rankin, the preacher. We're not standing firm in our traditions. We're standing firm in Jesus. Because he's the one that has the power. He's the one that has the light. He's the one that can make us shine. He's the one that can make us live even in difficult circumstances, like he did for the Thessalonians, where there was rioting, where there was opposition and persecution of the church. We don't have our faith in ordinary people. You don't put your faith in me. You don't put your faith in the church. You don't put your faith in individual people, even if they've been influential and helpful to you when you became a Christian. You put your faith in the risen Lord Jesus Christ, because he is the one who has the power. He's the one who can help. So what we're saying then today is maybe we need to flick that big switch in our lives too. That big switch which takes us off dependence on people and really has us just look personally ourselves to Jesus. Jesus, the risen Lord. Paul says, now we live. He says, I'm so excited. I feel like I've got a whole new life myself just because you're standing firm in the Lord. You're not standing in me, says Paul, because if you'd done that and I'd left, you'd have fallen. You're standing firm in the risen Jesus. And he stayed on in Thessalonica when I had to leave. He's there. He's with you. And if you're switched on to him, then you have power in your life all the time. And you can stand firm no matter how challenging or difficult it is for you in your personal life today. And no matter what the people around you say, and no matter what personal challenges you face in your business or in your money situation or in your relationships or whatever, Jesus Christ is living and he has the power. And because he has the power, you can live you can stand firm in him. Well, we'll leave the message there now, and may God help you and help me to really be connected powerfully to Jesus in our lives.